Oh, yes, indeed. Over-the-air radio. And for now, these multiple internet streams, but particularly over-the-air radio, is the last bastion of free speech. It really is. But if you get the idea that maybe you're not getting the whole story, I invite you to join us at caravantomidnight.com. It's extraordinarily inexpensive. There are over 1,650 programs, and there's not a clinker in the lot waiting for you for the mere price. No adjustment for inflation. $60 a year will get you the access to the whole thing. And I recommend that you do it. And may I mention, please, that it would be very good if you would get a Rumble account sooner than later, because we do stream over YouTube, but that may come to a crashing halt at any time. And that goes for DLive, too. They don't think we're fostering a healthy environment because we talk about things like what we're talking about tonight. So remember, your options are, for now, YouTube, but then there's vocalnow.com. That's vocal with a K. Rumble, for Pete's sake, please get a Rumble account. Also, DLive for now and Ops Lens, which is a military intelligence officer's former and present, or current, rather. And it's a great website as well. So join us, because you never know when all of the platforms will go down. We'll have a secure server somewhere for you. So let's carry on with Mike McKibben. Wow, unbelievable. So why the Queen? What does the Queen do? What does the royal family do besides go out there and mess up in public? Because that seems to be what they're best at. I mean, is there any, does the royal family wield any power at all? Then I never know.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure the Queen's the richest woman in the world, the richest person in the world.
Well,
one of the things that we must realize is that in 1909, these people got together and they organized something called the First Imperial Press Conference in 1909. And at that, they had newspaper men from the empire, about 650 of them, gathered in London, and they specifically discussed how they were going to organize their communication systems as the Marconi wireless system was becoming commercially operating around the world. They actually had Marconi at this conference. And there was very little written about this organization, almost nothing. And cut a long story short, we discovered in a box in a warehouse in a Midwestern university a copy of the transactions of this two-week conference. And it was the Pilgrim Society getting organized. And I'm bottom-lining a lot of these things because there's so much in that conference. But everyone was there, including Winston Churchill, by the way. They, at the end of that conference, they formed something called the Imperial Press, the Empire Press Union, and we now know them as AP, Reuters, and then a month later, the Parliament organized MI6, MI5, and GCHQ, and they actually say in the parliamentary records that the first agents for those spy agencies were going to be the newspapermen of the British Empire. So what we see there is the emergence of modern propaganda was the driver, and intelligence was their product. And so they saw the newspapermen of the world as their best mechanism for spying on their enemies all around the world and then getting that information very quickly back to London so they could stay ahead of the game. And that was in 1909. So what we see there is there was a complete seizure of the whole world of propaganda, where they actually discuss that they were making a specialty of creating public opinion. Not reporting it, but creating it. And one of the key organizers of that conference and a key strategist of the Pilgrim Society was a man by the name of W.T. Stead, who was Rhodes' biographer. Well, among other things, he was one of the chief architects of what's called the social gospel. So all of that liberal strain of theology that crept into the United States and to all of Christianity around the world was really the product of the outgrowth of how these guys were going to carry forward their drive for one world government and for one world communication. And so W.T. Stead was a key player, and he actually wrote a pamphlet that he trained William Randolph Hearst on called Government by Journalism. And they have carried that out. They have decided that the world is not going to be run by governments. It's going to be run by journalists who then ally with key corporations. And so these multinational corporations will use propaganda to make sure that they secure permanent profits for themselves all around the world to this day. That is the system that's in place right now that we call the deep state.
This is unbelievable. It really, really is. And I'm looking at a printed out PDF here of a little book, The Lincoln Encyclopedia, Lincoln's Anxiety Over War, Corporations, A Reign of Money, Power, Era of Corruption and Safety of the Country, the William F. Elkin letter, November 21st, 1864. This is interesting, ladies and gentlemen, including compelling evidence that the incoming British ambassador, Sir Frederick W. A. Bruce, to be received by Lincoln the very day he died, April 15, 1865, may have been there to oversee the assassination for the Bank of England and the British East India Company. Bruce was a notorious slaver and opium trafficker. Assassin John Wilkes Booth's parents were English. John Wilkes, his British namesake and notorious hedonist, MP, London Sheriff, Lord Mayor, was also Chamberlain of the City of London, in parenthesis, Finance Director.
Yeah, the thing they hated about Lincoln was he created something called greenbacks. And greenbacks were to be, not going to borrow money for the war at 35% interest, which is what the British banks and American banks were offering him. So he created something called the greenbacks, and there's several versions of it. But what they discovered is that the American people, having created their own money without having it bear interest, and not be controlled by private bankers, was quite successful. And so what the British were determined to do, the bankers were determined to do, was to make sure that stopped. And there's various other proof of this as well. And so we've spent a lot of time looking at that. And I am certain from our research, this is me personally speaking, that they took out Lincoln because he was going to continue the greenback system, which would have been meant the American people would create their own currency and not these private banks headquartered in London and driven by the Rothschilds. But there was also J.P. Morgan, Morgan's dad at that time. There was George Peabody, Rothschild. That was Lionel Rothschild. The Barclays Bank people were there at that time, as was the National Westminster Bank. So what we see is that there were a lot of forces aligning against our president as he was beginning his second term. And the English connection to John Wilkes Booth is just compelling. That who would name their child after a hedonist? It's a sad part of our history, but what we can now see is that one of the things that these, as they got organized around the time of the Pilgrim Society, they ordered J.P. Morgan to come into the United States and buy up all the editorial control of all the major newspapers. By the way, this is in the Congressional Record. And he did that. And they then ordered Andrew Carnegie to go out and basically buy control of all the American libraries and all the key publishers. And Rockefeller was also in on that with the publishers. And so what they did is they realized they had to control America's perception of the British because it was not positive at that time. And so what all of us are the products of what they bought. And they wanted to change America's negative view of Britain and make it positive. And they've been largely successful at that. And that we keep hearing this special relationship, right? We never knew what it meant. We thought it was kind of warm and fuzzy and neat. But in fact, it was we gave up all intelligence to the British at the end of World War II, after we just spilled our blood all over the planet for them.
Again, I don't mean to wax juvenile, but it seemed pretty apparent to me, because I've long held these suspicions about the British government. Long held these suspicions, even though certainly I'm not as well read in history, but I see these little symptoms here and there. Let's take this this 2016 election and the Steele dossier. To me, a former MI6 spy, which why he'd put his name and his face out there in public being a former MI6 spy, with a name like Christopher Steele, I mean, he might have named himself that typical 60s disc jockey name and called himself Christopher St. John. Christopher Steele, right. That doesn't even sound like a real name. I'm not sure he's even a real person, but maybe. But
let's be clear. There's no such thing as a former MI6.
That's what I'm thinking. That's like a former Chinese military general who bought all this property down next to a fighter pilot training base. And oh my gosh,
all of the information related to the Trump Russia hoax, we have chapter and verse. We can show that it all emanated out of London and GHQ and MI6, and that he was taking orders from Sir Richard Dearlove, who was the head of MI6. There's pictures of him with many of our generals. And then we now see that a number of our major generals are to this day involved with British corporations where the queen, the monarch, owns the golden share. In other words, when they supposedly privatized all of their national corporations, all they did was they gave the monarch a special share, and then that special share would basically drive that corporation. And that's what we have today. So you ask about the queen, you know, they've made her out to seem like this, certain type of warm, fuzzy person. But in fact, the Privy Council, the Queen's Court, nobody can question the Queen's business. And so therefore, all of these corporate monsters, these banksters, all hide behind the Queen's Council and the Privy Council. So nobody can ask about her business, and that's how they've been able to pull this off.
Nobody can ask about her business.
Nope.
Well, then, let me ask you this. Now, if this is, I don't want to take you in a direction you don't want to go, because I'm sure that your head has is filled with things that you want to communicate, so I don't want to get you off the track, but this current economic unpleasantness and this puppet administration we have up here, clearly this president is not making any decisions. And clearly President Trump was making decisions that a bunch of people were really, really unhappy with out there in the world of finance and so forth. So I guess my short question is, I'm seeing a headline here, goodbye middle class, 50% of all U.S. workers made $34,612.04 or less last year. And I'm wondering, could it be that the British government is behind the economic threat of collapse, the threat of economic collapse in the country? Is the British government, can a case be made for that government being behind even this?
Yeah, think about this. We're talking about labor. Remember that key issue is control of labor.
Yes.
You control labor, you control a country. And what happens whenever a country gets prosperous, your middle class rises. So your middle class increases your cost of labor. So think of it, this cold, hard banker. I need to cut my labor costs. I have too many middle class people. I don't make as much money. Now, that's good for us as the people on Main Street, but it's not good for the banksters. And so their mechanism, part of their mechanism, is collapsing the value of the middle class, lowering that labor cost. And in our case, we can see they're actually pushing immigration to bring in cheaper labor into this country. So and at the same time, if you collapse the economy, you make it less able for the middle class to make their mortgage payments and to pay their bills. And so what ends up happening is they have to go into foreclosure, and then guess who buys them up?
Mm-hmm.
It's the banksters.
And
so this is a vicious cycle of collapsing the middle class, because the middle class is an enemy to lower labor cost. It's that brutally simple.
And the additional brutal simplicity is the Klaus Schwab motto: in 10 years you will own nothing and you will be happy.
Right, so we're debt slaves. The debt slavery is something they created in 1812.
While proclaiming increased amounts of freedom for everyone and increased levels of happiness, actually it's just another bank job and nothing more.
Well, that's the propagandists. These guys, I mean, I hope people are starting to recognize the verbiage of the propagandists, because these guys learned long ago that if they say certain words, it completely takes all the wind out of the sails of moral people. And one of them is peace. Andrew Carnegie saw this early. We actually have the document where he wrote this. He says, whatever you're going to do, always talk about peace. Whatever your activity is, it's all about peace. Or about the children. You know, they have certain things that are tried and true propaganda mechanisms to fool a large percentage of the people on Main Street. These are moral people. And so that's our other handicap as moral people, or to people who try to be moral, is that they're not out to get their neighbor. They actually believe golden rule. And so they always give people the benefit of the doubt. But what we've got to realize is that we're dealing not with flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and spiritual wickedness in high places. We're addressing demons here. We're not addressing other human beings. And, you know, Jesus had to call out the demon legion, didn't he? And that's really, I think, what we've got to do now. We've got to call out these demons and get their names. And I think the one in London is Mammon.
A lot of people can't, they can't wrap their minds around the spiritual aspect of their lives. And that is why we really do, flawed individuals that we may be, and certainly we are, we still take the spiritual aspect as prime. And you just wonder if what Lord Jesus said, Lord Yeshua, that turns out to be his name, I do believe, but we've called him Jesus, so that'll work for now, even though ... This is the way that the world is, and there will be no changing it from what its current state is into something else, but it is our part to fight against it as we can with everything we have, starting with prayer and supplication, because we cannot, I don't think we have the will as a people, if that concept really even exists, you know, as a collective of people who want the same thing. Well, look around, not everybody wants the same thing. Some people absolutely, they just relish the idea of abandoning any individual initiative and being a willing slave and just do what they're told, and they'll be taken care of, and that'll be fine. I just wonder if we have the will to continue fighting this absent a solid spiritual foundation, after which the mind will follow, and then, of course, the body will follow. Sorry?
That's the promise that God gives us. You know, I look at it this way in terms of, this is a big problem, and of course, I didn't know any of this stuff 12 years ago. And it's easy to get overwhelmed by it. But on the other hand, our job is not to be successful. Our job is to be faithful. And I think of the parable of the sowers and the sower. And so I think that, or the other parable, the parable of the talents, we've got to use the talents that God has given us. However meager, however humble, however great they are, just use them. And if we do that every day and just seize any opportunity we have to be a faithful steward that day with whatever it is, then we can lay our head confidently on the pillow at night knowing that we did our best that day. And if we do that every day, this is what I've seen, that we empower the spiritual world in a way, because the angels are there to help us, God's Holy Spirit's there to help us, and so consequently, by us just being faithful, we unleash spiritual powers that fight against these the spiritual wickedness in high places. And so we can't even know how effective our efforts are each day, because that's in God's hands, not in ours. He gives the increase.
I was talking with Jack Maxey last night. Well, it is exciting, but we must remind ourselves of this every morning. You know, I miss every once in a while, but not often. And I like to begin every day by just recognizing that this reality is not of my making. This life is not of my making. And so I really do this. And I admit I do miss every once in a while, but not often. And I just say, and I speak the words, this is the day that the Lord himself, that God himself has made. So I will rejoice and I will be glad in it come what may. I think that's where we need to start, because from that, everything Amen. Else follows. If I do it, right. I have a good day. If I don't do it, I don't have a good day. So, effect, you know, cause and effect. I'll tell you what, these hours are going by quickly, and we will take ourselves a little break here pretty quick. But when we come back, there's no doubt about it that social media has been weaponized on a spectacular level. When you get to the point that a president, a sitting president of the United States of America, you know, the bastion of freedom and liberty, when he can be banned from Facebook or Twitter or any of these platforms, what sort of monstrosities are we dealing with? How much power do they hold? And what form can the payback come in? But I'm looking forward to that, because no one could deny social media is not just about telling your friends what kind of cake you're baking. It would be nice if that were the case, but you can see what it's turned into. It is a means of distributing propaganda, if not overtly, then by omission, by censoring others. This is Ark Midnight. We shall return after this brief break. Please stand by. Michael T. McKibben is with us tonight, and what a pleasure it is to be able to speak with you, Mike. His websites are www.leader.com and https://americansforinnovation, and use the number 4, americansforinnovation.blogspot.com. And on Twitter and Facebook, Infringing Thief on both of them. That's pretty strong, I think. Infringing Thief, you know, maybe even Impinging Thief. So what about, how do we go from talking about our dog and our kitty cat and our cake and our kids and all that to swimming in this disgusting pool of propaganda that otherwise known as social media? How did this happen, and why did we put up with it?
First of all, I want everybody to know that what they see out there in the way our invention has been implemented is not the design that we created. What we created was a system that would honor the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights and honor each person's privacy. We actually had a rule on data that if you hosted the data, you owned the contents and the way it was to be shared. But Department of Defense, we actually know the group that stole it. It's here in this country. It's called the Office of Net Assessment. It's a group in the Department of Defense that specifically focuses on weaponization of technology. Now, isn't that good use of your technology, of your tax dollars? But anyway, yeah. They were associated with a group called the Highlands Group, and that was a, quote, public-private partnership where they, which we know now means fascist, was a group of technologies that were aligned with the Department of Defense to implement the decisions they made on weaponization of technology. And I will, as a sidebar, say that we actually have a whistleblower who came to us and actually identified that she personally was at meetings that Anthony Fauci attended.
Oh, there you go.
Weaponized viruses.
And that first office that you mentioned, Mike, is the office of what?
Office of Net Assessment.
Okay. Net Assessment.
It's a euphemism for weaponizing technology.
In other words, I'll say it is.
This group decides how many people are going to die by the use of a particular technology. It's a horrendous thing that our government has allowed to happen here. But anyway, so the technology that you see when you share a photo and you can tag that photo in somebody else's profile, that particular mechanism was our innovation, among other things. And so consequently, it allows you to have scalable communication. So one person can see one person's photo can be seen by a million people all at once. That wasn't capable until this technology came along. And so I had a group of shareholders, and we raised a total of $20 million in private investments. No institutional money, no venture capital. And those people all took risks. And they took their risks in me and our company. And to this day, even though our technology arguably is the most used technology on the planet, my shareholders have not been paid a dime for the risk that they took. So the whole mechanism of our government has now aligned against us as the entrepreneurs, as the inventors, to protect this interest of these bankers to control communications, to make profits, and to control propaganda has been aligned against us. And so what we did during Trump's years is we put something forward that essentially, it's called the Miller Act notice, and it's essentially a lien on the federal government, because we actually put a number to how much the government owes us for this theft. And that lien is current on the current administration, as it was on the last administration. And part of our solution, we got some of our shareholders together, and we said, okay, we want to get paid, but how can we contribute to this mess that we see happening today with propaganda? And so I have agreed, and many of our shareholders have agreed, that when we get paid, we will put up half of the cash that we receive back in licenses to fund essentially a free press in the United States, which we can now see we've never had. And so with that independent mechanism for funding on an ongoing basis, we take communications and we actually do things with the free press that our founders conceived of but never actually were able to implement. And that can happen with this going forward. So we want to, everyone using a cell phone, for example, all of those apps on your phone, those are all infringing our patent. Anybody that logs on to a website and has a user profile associated with it, that's infringing our patent. And I think if you ask the average person, they don't know that. And so what we see is when they actually become aware of it, they say, well, wait a second, that's not right. And so we have proposed that this mechanism be created by which our shareholders can get paid, and we can create a truly free press for the first time. And a part of that will be to implement free elections going forward as well, which we can also see that if we've had them, it's been a long time ago. So free press, free elections, those seem to be the two key things we need in our country.
Yeah. I think there's a fellow who wrote that book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, and a number of other ones, G. Edward Griffin, and I like him quite a lot. And he makes mention of the 3%. We're looking for the 3% who can change the world for the better. And I just wonder, now this may not be your thing at all, and we don't have to dwell on it at all. We can go right past it if you want to. No big deal. But what about the education system? Is the destruction of our education system and the insertion of all this ridiculous critical race theory and all this other nonsense and the trans this and all that, I mean, nobody on this end of the microphone cares what you have to do to get yourself through the night. Keep it, it's your business. But you, when you start making it into a political platform, that's a problem for me. You know, I don't see any, hetero pride parades or any of that. I see people, you know, trying to raise a family, but I digress slightly. And it is this. Say that again. I'm sorry, I stepped on you.
So what we've discovered on that particular subject is this was all part of the plan. What we see was occurring in the late 1800s is there was a very concerted effort to disempower the Christian church in Britain and around the world. And these guys were not just not interested in Christianity. They were interested in destroying Christianity. And one of the things that they developed was something we mentioned earlier called the social gospel. And essentially that was to take the basic theologies of the Christian church and disengage them from Jesus Christ, and to make the church nothing but a social distribution system that would then be able to feed their labor markets worldwide with essentially pablum and a disempowered Christianity. And part of that was their commitment to destroying the family, destroying male authority, destroying women, to demoralizing every aspect of our culture, and to use their money to do that. And so part of that Carnegie and Rockefeller money was money that they put into these supposedly nonprofit corporations, which don't pay taxes, and spend endless money hiring people inside universities and in schools to put forward just an endless stream of this social gospel message to the point where it has now infused itself into every aspect of our culture. So they've been at this for a long time, and it's just gotten more effective and more noticeable of late.
Well, most normal people would have a little bit of a conscience of over just killing random people. Well, we estimate that we'll lose X number of hundreds of thousands or a couple of million or something like that. I wonder if your government, the United States government, here in the land of the free and the home of the brave, would put two atomic bombs, one each, on a city that had no military importance whatsoever, but was stocked strictly with civilians doing no military work at all. If they would drop atomic bombs on these people, what do you think they would do to you if you get out of line, Mr. and Ms. America?
Right.
But not everybody's like that. Not everybody can just obliterate people like you fed them into a brush chipper, because you're going to make some money if you do it, and everything's going to be fine, and you can continue what you've been doing for a few centuries. I mean, what kind of conscience is that?
They're not. They're psychopaths. They have no empathy. And this has been bred into this group of people we're talking about here. We're talking about generational psychopaths. And when you've got all the money you could ever want and all the power you want, it does something to you as a human being. It sucks all of your empathy out of your body, and therefore other human beings are not to be respected as being made in the image and likeness of God. They're not to be treated by the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's just the opposite. These people have learned long ago that they can take advantage of people with empathy and always stay one step ahead of the game. But Jesus said something very specific. He said, you need to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. And I think that's what we've got to do now. We've got to realize that we have been hoodwinked for centuries, and we didn't know what history meant. This history that we're writing for the first time now has never been out there in any history book I have seen. And this is the truth history. And so what we've got to do is empower ourselves with truth history, and I agree. I don't know that it's going to take more than 3%. And I think that there are 3% out there. There's probably more like 10%.
Yep.
And so I'm pretty encouraged about that in terms of just sheer numbers. But I think that we've got to realize that our warfare is not against flesh and blood. And I think that probably most folks aren't there. We've got to realize we're so uncomfortable talking about spiritual things in the public. Why is that?
Isn't that funny? I don't know.
It's because this propaganda machine has been pounding us since the early part of the last century with keep Christ out of the public square. Keep Christ out of the public square. Don't talk about your religion. And so they have developed a mechanism for convincing people to do that that's been very effective. Very effective. But it's not uniformly true, and we're still here. I think that the Bible says that the church is the salt of the earth. The believers in Christ are the salt of the earth, and I think that's been the preservative. And it's time for Christians to now realize that this is a spiritual warfare, and we better start demanding the name of these demons.
We've got. And when you say that. You mean naming the people who are the demons?
No. Well, yeah, that, but more specifically, we've got to stand in front of those demons like Jesus stood in front of the demoniac and say, what is your name? And the demon is afraid of Jesus. The demon has to give his name. He said, we're legion because we're many. And Jesus said, okay, go to the swine. And they did, and the swine ran off the cliff. So we have specific biblical examples for what we need to do. We just got to do it. What is your name? My name is Legion. They have to name themselves.
Michael, do they also have to confess? I have heard in the recent past that if you look closely and if you know what you're looking at, if you know what you're looking for, you can see their confession before they do these heinous things, which somehow allows them to cheat hell. Have you heard of anything like this?
I have. And I'm not well read on this subject, but I do know people who are and who are very experienced in this area. And they say, yes, they have a, in order to maintain their power, they have a requirement to tell people what they're going to do, basically, before they do it. It's their power.
I wonder how we can hear it. I wonder how more people can hear what they're actually being told.
Well, I think that they write about it. They talk about it. So there are a lot of people who talk about the Rockefeller papers. We've gone much earlier than that as well into the things that Andrew Carnegie was working on, John D. Rockefeller, the British Lords, Lord Milner, Cecil Rhodes, W.T. Stead, Philip Whitwell Wilson. By the way, did you know that the British Pilgrim Society were the ones that coached Vladimir Lenin in London?
Does not surprise me in the least.
We're talking about these same people.
Mm-hmm.
And so none of us want to believe that there's could be such a conspiracy. But guess what? Who invented the conspiracy theory notion? It was these people.
Mm-hmm.
So they did it to hide their assassination of Kennedy.
Yes.
And so they learned that that was a very good propaganda mechanism, and they've still played it to this day.
Absolutely astounding. It really is. And if you weren't on this program talking about this, there'd be a few million people fewer who knew anything about this. People suspect they know, but it hasn't been confirmed, and they have to move on with whatever happens to be their lot in their daily lives. You know, they got to get back to it. Very few have that leisure time to be used for thinking about these higher things and trying to get an idea as to where we actually are in the not only in the grand scheme of things, but on the macro level as well. That's what leisure time was supposed to be. It wasn't supposed to be about bouncing a ball around. It was supposed to be taking time to think about those things you don't really have time to during your work time. And I think people need to get back to it.
You asked me about social media and the current state of things. And one of the a whole other area of the focus for these people coming out of the Pilgrim Society was their alignment with the British Psychological Society. And they experimented on their returning troops after World War One with a lot of these techniques that they refined. And I think a lot of people have heard the Tavistock Institute. But that was an institute in London associated with the British Psychological Society, and they specifically, with Rockefeller funding, were focused on how to use their research in this area of mind control to create and change public opinion and to implement various mechanisms of mind control in the propaganda, which where they were also seizing control of through their newspapers and then through British Wireless and then RCA and then NBC and blah, blah, blah. So this wasn't a casual commitment on their part. They were going to pull out all the stops, use all the funding they needed worldwide to make sure that they could, in these telecommunication systems, they could implement these propaganda mechanisms so that they really could practice mind control. This isn't kind of trivial. They were focused on it. And so, you know, when we were growing up, I remember one of the early books of Vance Packard's Hidden Persuaders, where we were reading about some of the techniques on Madison Avenue to get people to buy things. That was all coming out of this same research. And so we saw, well, it's just about advertising. I'm glad they're not using it on us. Well, folks, they were using it on us the whole time. And so a lot of these, remember these jingles that are still stuck in your head all these years later?
Sure.
From a lot of those ads? Well, those were all carefully calculated to make sure you never forgot them. And then any time you heard the jingle, you remembered exactly what it was. Those were all techniques that they learned how to embed in people, and they experimented on how many tens of thousands, we don't know. We're talking to people who have seen the brain experiments that were being conducted in Germany and were moved to New York, by the way, after the war, where they were studying human brains and how they responded to various stimuli. And so now we get into social networking. One of the things that's occurring right now is there's a fusion occurring between biology and technology. And they're using a lot of these 5G signals and the wireless technology to be able to take this mind control mechanism to the next level and actually change our biology using nanotechnology. So there's a fusion occurring right now that's very dangerous.
Perhaps we could have a conversation in the not-too-distant future about fusing biology and technology and taking everything all the way to the robot level. We just do what is suggested to us. What a pleasure and privilege to be able to...
I can prove to you everything I've just said, and I can show you a newspaper advertisement that was developed in 1933 where they actually predicted what's going on right now.
In
1933. Actually, I'm sorry, 1924. David Sarnoff wrote a whole newspaper article on how wars would be over in 4 minutes because there would be a fusion of bacteriology and wireless.
Wow. Well, I'm going to say it again. It's been a privilege and a pleasure to be able to speak with you, and I look forward very much to our next conversation. God bless you and all those you love, and keep punching because Lord knows we need you out there on the field with us.
Thank you. You keep pounding away too, John.
You bet I will, Mike. Take care out there. From the Bridge of the Ark, this is John B. Wells. For everybody here at Caravan to Midnight, I say God bless you, everyone. Talk to you Monday. Good night.